Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new Leet Posen podcast with Cody Walmsley and Chris Coriel. Get ready for a high-energy, rancorous take on the state of affairs in the InfoSec and privacy industries. Chris and Cody are about to shine a light on the cyber-industrial complex. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Welcome, everyone, back to another episode of Leet Posen. My name's Cody Walmsley, and I'm here with Chris Coriel. And this week, we've got new, exciting, awesome news. Or it's awesome, I guess, depending on your perspective. Am I right or am I right? So here's what happened. Here's what's going on. Here's what we're going to talk about today. Over the weekend, I saw an article. So did Chris. We both saw an article about GoDaddy. GoDaddy got hit with a phishing scheme. So that's a voice phishing scheme for those of you that don't know. So that means that some people called in, pretended to be somebody that they're not. They got access to a whole bunch of stuff and it caused a lot of chaos. Chris, do you have some extra details on this?
Well, hi, Cody. Thank you. Yes, I got a couple extra details here. So according to a few articles that are out there in the internets, it looked like these. So let's give it some context, right? So we're all working from home. That includes all the customer service people. So they're no longer in a center together, able to access, probably able to access the same day they normally do, but they don't have anybody they can talk to. So you're sitting home, and I think in the queue, probably what happens is if somebody calls in into the customer service and is busy, that you can actually choose to leave a voicemail. And this sounds like this is kind of what's going on here. So these voicemails, I guess, were asking for some data, or I don't know, it's not very clear. But what happened was they harvested the GoDaddy employee data, is what it sounds like, enough where they probably were able to get access to certain domains, and these were cryptocurrency website domains. So what they ended up doing is getting access to these domains, and then I think they took them down, so they caused all kinds of havoc.
Yeah, I mean, what I saw is that they changed the DNS records on them, and they were redirecting people, right? So some of these were cryptocurrency like exchanges, maybe, or sort of like banks or financial services companies, and so people who had actual money in accounts, that money might have been compromised. Is that right?
That sounds about right. Yes. So it reminds me of a hack a few years ago, the infamous Twitter handle hack. And that was another social engineering experiment that went bad for, depending on what side of the coin you're on here. But similar, and it still happened with GoDaddy. So in that case, there was some security questions that got answered, and the attacker basically worked with the customer service rep, and by working together and pretending to be someone they're not and being confident, they were able to access somebody's account, change the email on the main account. And then all of a sudden they owned it. And then they basically extorted them from a bunch of money and their Twitter handle, the single letter Twitter handle. So,
This summer? Wasn't it like Jack Dorsey, CEO of Twitter and a bunch of other people? I kind of remember seeing something like that over the summer where there was a whole bunch of high profile Twitter accounts that
celebrity
were
accounts.
Compromised. Yeah.
Yep, that happened again. So this was the one I'm referring to was actually back in 2014, so six years ago. Yeah. So anyways, I think, we had a conversation last week on our show. We were talking about, better controls will basically prevent some of these breaches and will enhance our security.
I remember there was a disagreement as to whether better controls really would or not.
There might have been a disagreement. So, So in this case, I guess the question is, if you get a voicemail and you're working for a company and you're a customer service rep and you get a voicemail of somebody asking you to access a certain website, what controls would you need to not put the onus on the customer service rep to give away things? I mean, how do you trust a voicemail? How do you know who that is?
Controls are in place right now? I mean, so they're just listening to the voicemail, and then, you know, based on whatever information they give. I mean, I'm assuming they're validating something versus other information that they've got in their database. Is that how it works?
Well, I can't speak directly because I haven't worked in that position, but I would guess. I mean, I've called into companies probably like you have, and if you have a long wait, they'll ask if you want to leave a message and you get a call back. So I'm assuming it's something to that effect, and they could probably look up your name and see that you're a customer. So obviously the attackers knew the right information to leave on the voicemail in order for the company employee to, you know, trust it. So there it is. So, you know, is the question, is there a better control that can be put in place to not put all the onus on the employee? Or, you know, my argument is that we need to, as employees, but also as people, because this happens in your daily life, everybody gets phishing attacks on their personal email. You got to start thinking security minded first. Here's a good example, Cody. Just, I think it was on the 21st. So a couple days ago, I got a text and it says, your Netflix account has been declined. And it gave me a short link to click on to go probably remedy that problem. Now, I know for a fact it wasn't because the card I have on it has been used and I actually logged into Netflix first. And I checked and everything looked fine. I did not click on the link in the text. It was just one of those things that a security-minded person, you try to go validate what they're saying before you trust the text. So maybe we boil down to, okay, you know, trust last and validate first. You know, trust but verify, that famous saying when you work with people, when you're managing people, when you're doing anything, you trust people to a certain extent, but always verify. So maybe you don't trust. In this case, security-minded people will verify first and then trust later. So maybe that's the thing. So, you know, some of the things we want to talk about are, do these security questions and do these security controls that we have these social interactions with corporations, are these really they haven't worked in 20 years of, you know, the internet, 30 years of the internet being around, and they still continue to fail companies. So, you know, maybe we need better controls in that regard.
Well, a lot of these questions, these validating questions that you're talking about, I hate them. And I hate them for a lot of reasons. The number one reason that I hate them is because very frequently it's stuff that's really easy to find out about somebody. It's like, what street did you grow up on? Or what's the name of your high school? Or, you know, what's the name of your first pet, or what kind of car did you have? You know, this is all stuff that you can find pretty easily on just about anybody out there these days. And so, you know, what's the real value in non-secret information being used to validate somebody? It's like almost, you know, having what's your address and just finding, you know, things that are listed on somebody in the phone book to validate who they are. So I think, you know, that's that's a real big problem with those kinds of questions that are out there. And I don't really know off the top of my head, you know, any great solutions to this, but I will say one thing. Let me give you an example of a situation that happened to me. And as you were telling your story, it reminded me of this. So a few years ago, I was out at the mall and I got a phone call on my cell phone and they said, you know, hey, this is so-and-so from your cell phone provider. We wanted to let you know that your account, somebody placed an order on your account. We just want to verify that you did this. And I was like, no, of course not. I didn't do that. And they're like, okay, no problem. We'll cancel it. You know, they were very convincing on the phone. And then that was about it. And I was like, well, I want you to lock the account down and don't let anybody place any more orders, obviously, and change, you know, at least lock the password. And they almost got me here. And they're like, okay, we're going to, in order to do that, you know, we need to verify you are who you say you are. And so we're going to send a code to your phone and you need to read it back to us. Well, I immediately got a code, you know, as a PIN code or whatever from my cell carrier on my cell phone. And in my mind, I wasn't, you know, fully in the security mindset, but my cell carrier had a nice little line right on there. It said, never tell this to anybody, even over the phone. And that was part of the text message. And so because that was there, it immediately brought me back into the security mindset and I didn't give it to him and I didn't get my account compromised. But if that wasn't there, I don't know. I might have. I don't know. It's just something I was thinking about.
That's amazing. Yeah, everybody's fast-paced life. You know, you're just moving along. You're not really thinking and you're just acting and it becomes like muscle memory, right? You know, you just act quick, especially with emails. Especially you see something, you click it, you pull up a website, and bam, you know they drive by malware, and next thing you know, they compromise your computer. So that's pretty cool. So that's actually a really interesting control, right? It's just a blurb and a text, but it saved you from giving it out. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about whether the user is the weakest link and all this kind of stuff. And in this case, I probably was, but they saved me from making a mistake by reminding me not to make a mistake. So that was the control. It was as simple as that. But anyway, that just came to mind as one example of what I would call sort of a control. That's there that can work, you know, things like that, to help people, and prevent them from making mistakes.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely little hints like that, I think, but it's the awareness too, right? I mean, you're acutely aware of these things, working in the industry, being a security person, and always being around it, as am I. So these things are probably second nature to us, and it even almost got you, like you said. So, you know, we need to dumb this stuff down, just so, because most people would never think of that. People are inherently trustworthy, right? So, you know, they're going to trust things that come to them. And I think that's really what these attackers prey on, is that people just think everyone's a good soul person like they are. So they're going to, you know, leverage that, and they're going to do stuff to trick somebody in their fast paced life to get them to click or to type something or to, you know, give away a password or whatever it is. And that's where we've got to think about everyday controls for the everyday person. And, you know, I don't have an answer either. But I think no matter, you know, kind of the premise of the show is, you know, the companies we work for have millions and millions of dollars, tens of millions, some hundreds of millions of dollars worth of security controls all over the place. I mean, you got, you know, from the network all the way in, and they do phishing tests, and they, you know, they have all kinds of policies and procedures and all these crazy things we have to go through because security's hard. Takes time, costs money. It's frustrating, but they have them in place for a reason. But still, at the end of the day, companies still continue to get breached. And it boils down to, you know, the human element. And while I'm not blaming the humans, it's just, you know, we got to think about creating better controls, because it's not just digital controls that are the things that are going to save us from ourselves. It's again, it's a mindset, and we got to think, you know, I guess don't trust and verify first. Maybe that's verify and trust second. I don't know. We got to come up with a good marketing slogan.
Well, we could talk about that whole zero trust thing that's all the rage these days, but I don't think we've got time on this show for that.
That's true. Zero trust is the new, it's the new one, the new
AI, right? And then that's the new blockchain. And then that.
Right. I was going to say the new Linux, but I was dating myself because, you know.
Well, I'm just throwing out whatever the term of the year is, you know, the hype term. It's zero
cybersecurity.
Trust.
Cybersecurity. Is it cybersecurity?
Yep. It's always something new. Threat intelligence and blinky lights and maps and all that stuff too. Yeah. So
deep state. I think that was last year or this year. We're still in this year. Deep state. That's the deep state. They're watching.
Yeah. I don't know. But all right. So I think we've come around full circle here to agreement that the verification and validation procedures that these companies are utilizing, at least for phone calls, is problematic. I think a big part of it is, like you mentioned, you know, people want to help people, and there's trust on both sides of this, right? So end users, consumers are trusting when, like my, you know, in my example, you know, If it hadn't have been for that thing, I may have trusted this. I mean, I never gave out any information to them, fortunately, but, you know, I was initially somewhat trusting based on what they were telling me, that help. Here's a problem that we found for you, and we're trying to help you with it. And then on the flip side, people that work in the companies are wanting to help their users, their customers. And so when they get a phone call from a customer and that sort of a thing, then, you know, they're going to want to help them, and they're going to want to do whatever they can to make the customer's day better. And if that means not adhering strictly to the security controls, that they have in place for validation, that may be what it takes. And so there's always that grease of business that kind of gets in the way, and I don't know if it gets in the way, but it makes it so that security controls may be skimmed over a little bit sometimes, where, you know, okay, you need to have 6 numbers of your credit card to verify who you are. And I heard an example earlier. Well, you know, what if I was able to find 5 of those numbers? Is that close enough? And, you know, when there's a human being on the other side making the judgment call as to whether or not this person is who they say they are, and they've given, you know, 5 out of the 6 numbers that I'm looking for, they probably are the person, right? What do you think about that, Chris?
Well, there it is. I mean, you're putting it now. Okay, so this goes back to my argument. You're putting all of the responsibility on the human, and there's no controls anymore. The only control is what they know and what they've been trained. And then it's sticking to it. So a good social engineer attacker, you know, they know that they have to befriend that person quickly and build trust. And if they could build enough trust to get them to guess for them, then they got them. So I guess what we're saying is we got to make everybody, you almost got to turn them into, you know, robots, and you got to stand firm. And no matter how many digits of the credit card they have or whatever it is, if they don't have all of them and they're not exact, then that's it. They're done. Hang up, move on. Next customer.
So eliminate exceptions and judgment calls. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. So you got to make everyone, you have to some stoicism in there, right? You got to, you know, you got to put the shield up and take your emotions down. And you're not friends with that person on the other end of the call. You never know who they are. They could be a friend, but they also could be trying to use you to get to something else. And it's for personal gain. So yes, exactly.
So this reminds me of a type of security incident that I deal with a lot, and that is the typical fraud from either the CEO or the CFO of the company, you know, reaching out to somebody else and telling them, you've got to send out this wire transfer right now.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. And I've seen it done 100 different ways, and a lot of them are very convincing. So, you know, we talk when I talk to clients, and when we talk about this generally, we're like, look, you've got to have these validation controls in place, where if the CEO is sending you an email telling you you need to wire transfer $3 million to some account immediately, that you've got a protocol in place where you got to pick up the phone and actually call the CEO and verify that this is what they wanted you to do. But in a lot of companies, a lot of them, the culture and the dynamic of the company is that the CEO or whoever it is, when they say something needs to be done, it needs to be done right then and no question. And getting people to change that concept around is really hard to do. Have you seen stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I can't mention any names, but I've been at places where when the CEO spoke, there were no questions and you had to act. And it was more like, you know, he said, jump, you say how high. But to your point earlier, having specific people that can do wire transfers, for example, assign a specific person, and the CEO has to be informed and that person has to be informed. And only those two can work together to do wire transfers or such things that have to do with financials, like W-2s or anything that's, you know, related to employee information. And usually there is a group that does that. It's usually not a huge group, and depending on the size of the company, but, you know, to your point, maybe that's the control. Okay. So, you know, only these 4 people can do these things, and anybody else that gets a request from the CEO to do wire transfers, it's bogus. Don't do it. Report it to the security folks and, you know, and drop it there. Right.
Okay. So let's Monday morning quarterback the GoDaddy thing. All right. So
which one?
The one that happened over the weekend with the DNS record changes and that sort of a thing.
Yeah.
Would a good control or a better control, and we don't know what the actual controls were in place or anything like that. We're speculating here, but would a control that may have been more effective have been, all right, if somebody wants to make a change to their DNS record, there's got to be buy-in by more than one person at the registrar or something like that, or more than one person to conduct validation or verification of the request or something like that. What do you think about that?
I think that's actually like 2-factor, right? So it's like 2-factor for humans. So I think that's a great idea. And maybe have, you know, a specific team that does it and they validate it for everybody. Now that might create a bottleneck, and that's how security works sometimes, where it is the roadblock to progress. But I think that's a great idea. So, you know, don't make everybody independent where they can do all those things. As a customer service rep, for example, give it to where they have to go through a team to do that, especially when it comes to changing DNS. I mean, that's important stuff, right? If you're changing somebody's DNS records or an admin on an account, I know they already have controls in there because it's happened before, and they send text messages and emails. And in the previous attack, the Twitter one we talked about, that's the exact thing that happened. The attacker got basically access to the main email of the domain. So then they became the owner. And even with all the controls in place, it still failed. And it's crazy how that happened. So maybe you're right to the point where we have specific people that handle it, and it has to be at least two. So it's kind of like the nuclear bomb thing, right? You have to have both keys. They have to be far enough apart, segregation of duty. They have to turn at the same time. I mean, it's almost the same thing. So that's a physical security protection. And we got to basically translate that when it becomes digital security. So it's got to work the same way.
Right on. Right on. Well, we have run our course today for this episode. So with that, Chris, I think you know what time it is, don't you? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
You're ready? Okay. Are you going to give us the Posen tip of the week?
I think I am. We've been holding this one for a few weeks. So what I suggest is you take all of your certification letters for all of your security certs and you line them up on your email signature. And I think you should do it on your Gmail and your personal email as well, and just put them out there for everybody to see how many tests you've taken and how long you've studied and how awesome you are in security. I think that's what we need to do. So everybody go ahead and do that tomorrow.
And the more lines you use, the better. So on your business card too, I would say, you know, have lots of commas in all those letters. Just keep going, you know, CISSP, CEH, CCISO, CISA, CISM, you know, CIPP. Just keep going, all of them. Just keep all the letters after your name. If you have fewer letters after your name than your actual name, then you're not going to convince people, right, that you really know what you're talking about, and you're not an effective poser. Am I right, Chris?
Absolutely right. 100% right.
Okay. All right.
So when are you going to put yours? Are you going to put yours on your card next? Oh wait, you have them there.
Hey, we're not above making fun of ourselves here. So with that,
that's the whole point of this.
With that, I think that's the end of this episode. I want to thank our co-host here, Chris Coryell, for taking the time tonight to give us his take on the GoDaddy DNS issues. And I want to thank everybody else for tuning in. Next week, we're going to talk about something else that's extremely exciting. And let's see what it is. It is, ooh, this is a hot one, Chris. TBD. Have you heard of that?
I have, yeah. I think we've had that before, too. I think it's becoming a popular item on the
show. Right, yeah, it's a really good topic. Can't wait. All right, well, we'll see everyone next time on Leap Posen.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Leap Posen Podcast with Cody Walmsley and Chris Coryell. If you learned something new, and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.